It's here and now. And our literary critic, Steve Almond, has been thinking about accents. Recently, Steve reviewed Irvine Welsh's Skag Boys for the New York Times Book Review. Now, that's a prequel to Welsh's acclaimed debut novel, Trainspotting, which tells the stories of young Edinburgh men caught up in heroin and other addictions and channels their voices in their own brogues, a sense of the poetry of their language to underscore the grimness of their stories. In reading Welsh's new book, Steve notes there are sentences that are completely incomprehensible, especially since it doesn't come with a glossary because of that attempt to speak in the young people's brogues. So, when does writing in a dialect help further a story, and when does it get in the way? Steve Almond joins us in the studio to parse that question. Steve, nice to see you as always.
Top of the morning to ya.
Well, I was just going to say we should give a really bad accents alert,
yes,
because we're probably going to have some. Talk about the
language. It's not a probably.
You are going to
hear some bad accents.
Okay. But talk about the language of Trainspotting and Skag Boys.
Well, Welsh is writing in a brogue, a thick Scottish brogue. I'll try to give you an example. This is your first bad accent warning. He went into the club minging after being on the pub all weekend. Okay.
What?
Yeah, exactly.
What does that mean?
That means he went into the club stinking after having drunk all weekend.
Wow.
Yeah. Minging, ifter. And what you can't see because we're here on radio is that the words are spelled phonetically. And that's a lot of what makes writing in dialect especially challenging is it's not just the oral experience, A-U, the listening to. It's actually that you have to decode language that's been spelled out phonetically rather than the King's English correct spelling. So the word on is actually, I guess in a brogue would be un, and it's O-A-N. So even that word, even the prepositions and the participles and the little words are actually spelled differently. So it's literally like reading a different language. I found the effect in Skag Boys to be absolutely maddening at first. And after a while, actually, that extra effort and the attention that's given to the way the language sounds really, I think Welsh is very effectively able to mine the poetry of the way that these guys speak. And it's quite beautiful. And it's more authentic because this is the way that the youths of Edinburgh speak.
But how do we know that it's accurate? Because trying to do someone's dialect, it can be mocking them if it's not done right. And there's two examples. One is just steadily always there. Mark Twain's The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, of course, was criticized for using dialect and especially for using the N-word. And then you have Catherine Stockett's The Help, criticized for being almost condescending or mocking or maybe inaccurate. So how do you know when something's being used well?
That's an aesthetic judgment. And I'm not here to say, Twain does it well because his book is very well known and famous, and Stockett does it poorly because they made a lousy movie out of her book. You know, that's an aesthetic judgment that each reader makes. What I will say is that when you read Huck Finn, Twain was one of the first people to say, look, the way that English is spoken in this country, America, is different than the books that we read. People have particular voices, and they speak in a particular way. They don't use words the right way, and they don't say words as we see them printed on the page. Therefore, the tradition of American realistic fiction or any kind of realistic fiction has to try to get that across to the reader. Huck Finn is an extreme example, but what I praise in it is that everybody has a different dialect. Huck has a particular way of speaking. Jim obviously has a far more extreme and critics would say caricatured way of speaking.
And he's the black character.
That's right. That's right. But even the Duke and the King, who are these two con men, they have their own kind of lingo where they're misusing words. They mean to say, let me pay you obsequies. Instead, they say, let me pay you orgies. You know, their pomposity and the way that they use the wrong word is a part of who they are as characters. So Twain would be getting it wrong if he didn't try to reflect that on the page. It does set you up, though, for a certain kind of criticism, especially when you're writing across culture, when you're writing across race, when you're writing across class or socioeconomic status.
Got it. But as you said, this is fiction, so it's kind of how the reader reacts. People loved The Help, even though there were people who felt in that case that it was condescending. Also because it was a white woman, the author, Catherine Stockett, writing in the voice of the maids in the book when she wrote The Maid's Point of View.
Right. The reason that organizations, for instance, like the Association of Black Women Historians, found that book to be troubling wasn't so much because they found the dialect childlike or over-exaggerated, though they did. It was because they felt like and you can lodge the same complaint against Huck Finn, that the African-American lives and suffering was being appropriated on behalf of a white protagonist to in some way ennoble them or to allow them to make moral progress. And that's a separate question from how the dialect itself is used. Although I will say, you know, Lowell have mercy, I'm a reckon I'm a do it, which is from The Help, does not feel like the most nuanced use of dialect. And I'll give you a counterexample that I think is absolutely remarkable, and that is Zora Neale Hurston's Their Eyes Were Watching God. It was written in 1937, and it's writing about African-American culture in Central Florida, and it's all African-American characters. Let me just read you a little bit of it. This is Nanny, who's the grandma to Janie, who is our protagonist, and she's very concerned that Janie is going to be abused by men and she's going to be miserable, and she's giving her advice. She says, "I can't die easy thinking maybe the men folks, white or black, is making a spit cup out of you. Have some sympathy for me. Put me down easy, Janie. I'm a cracked plate." She uses expressions like making a spit cup out of you. That's what you're going to become. Or put me down easy, Janie. I'm a cracked plate. Cracked plate isn't spelled differently. It's not done phonetically. It's not dialect. It's the way that a good author can inhabit the minds of the characters through the word choice that they use, through the rhythms of their speech, not just through the phonetics of it.
We've got one more. I want you to get this one in.
Sure.
It's Henry Roth's Call It Sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Again, bad accent alert. But
very bad. Right.
But there's a few here.
Well, Call It Sleep, which was published in 1934, is all about the Lower East Side of New York. And there's this fascinating decision that Henry Roth, the author, makes. When the characters are speaking English in the street and at school, it's accented, and you can hear that. You can hear that it's a Yiddish accent. So one character says, "I seen a blitz when I comed in." "A blitz, you dope. So how do you say blitz, wise guy?" "A lightning, you dope. A blitz. Can't you talk English? Ha ha." All right, so that sounds like Yiddish. I can do that a little better. Mm-hmm. But when they're speaking Yiddish at home, and the parents, that is, are speaking Yiddish, they speak perfect English. In other words, it's transcribed in the way of a sophisticated speaker of the language, a first language speaker. For instance, there's an exchange between David, the protagonist, and his mother, and they're both speaking in Yiddish. He says, "Mama, water doesn't burn when you throw a match in a puddle." He's very young. He's probably 6 years old. So he's saying this to his mother, and his mother says, "Puttle," she repeated. "What is puttle? Your Yiddish is more than one half English now. I'm being left behind." That's the real crucial thing about language in this book, is that it's about the immigrant experience and the way in which, if you know how to speak the language, you have power in the culture. And when you don't, you get left behind.
And just to, again, be clear, you were just reading the English interpretation of how they were speaking in Yiddish, and it was very high language.
That's exactly right, yeah. And it's a little bit confusing. That book especially is a challenge to read. Part of the reason that people are resistant, Robin, to reading dialect is it's not the standardized English that we grew up reading in school. It's not the English of academics or of classic literature, but Faulkner, Flannery O'Connor, and basically anybody who's from the southern United States does not speak phonetically and with the same rhythms and same vocabulary as they do in the very small part of the United States where people don't have, quote-unquote, an accent. I think good authors are able to take advantage of those, capturing the way that people speak without confusing the reader.
We're talking accents, dialects, and their use in literary works with Here and Now literary critic Steve Almond, also author in his own right, his latest collection of short stories, God Bless America. Steve, thanks as always.
Absolutely.
Here Now is a production of WBUR Boston in association with the BBC World Service and PRI. I'm Robin Young. Please, as we always say on Monday, join us to see what this week brings. Here and Now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software. Find over 200 job openings at mathworks.com.
PRI, Public Radio International.